Hello and welcome to Dropped Frames, where we discuss film adaptations of popular video games and why they work or don't as they drop from 60 to 24 frames. My name is Josh. With me today are Alec and Chris. How are you guys doing?
I'm good, man. I've been waiting to do this for a couple weeks now, and it's exciting. I liked this movie, and I want to talk about it, and it's so weird.
It's weird. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm excited. Excited to get this podcast kicked off. I think this is a good starter one. It's a good one to talk about.
It was really the first when we started planning. This was really the movie that jumped out to me the most as like, I think we have to start with Sonic.
Yeah, there's enough to talk about with this movie after everything it went through, both in like the public slaughtering of it when it was first shown off when the first trailer came out, and then to its result, which was all in all a pretty competent film in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
It's such a strange story, but I like the whole thing. I love when things turn out better than they are expected to, and that's the theme of this movie, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into it. Let's talk a little bit about the people involved with this movie. It was directed by Jeff Fowler, and this was his first big break. He didn't really have any anything really big before this, so congrats to him on Sonic. It is starring Ben Schwartz as Sonic, James Marsden, and Jim Carrey, of course. And it was written by the writing duo Pat Casey and Josh Miller, who I guess Jim Carrey really liked their writing because they are now going to be doing the Ace Ventura 3 for Amazon, wow. Starring, of course, Jim Carrey. I guess they had a good working relationship there. The three of them are going to work together again.
That's pretty cool. That's probably because they kind of let Jim Carrey be Jim Carrey in this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And from what I remember, Josh Miller specifically, he's been around a while. I think he was a writer on some of the National Lampoon movies. Maybe it was, I don't remember if it was Dorm Days that I'm thinking of specifically, but I know I've heard his name attached to other comedies and stuff. So it kind of makes sense to me that he and Jim Carrey would have a pretty solid understanding of each other.
Yeah, so he's definitely familiar with the more like the silly kind of over the top slapsticky kind of humor. So it definitely comes through in this one. That's for sure. And Ben Schwartz of a lot of things. He was in the voice world. Technically, he was the voice of BB-8 from Star Wars. Also, of course, from Parks and Recreation, John Ralphio.
John Ralphio.
Yes. I think he did great as Sonic. I think he was a really good Sonic.
Yeah, I think he was fantastic. I think he's also a voice on DuckTales. I think he's one of the nephews.
Yes, that is right.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I think he does a great Sonic. And then James Marsden, everyone's favorite backup choice.
Yeah, James Marsden stands out to me as the weirdest casting in the entire movie. Like, maybe it's just because the last time that I really paid attention to James Marsden was in like the Sex Drive era of his career.
You're right.
So just seeing him as this like adoptive parent or best friend to Sonic was not my first choice, but
yeah, and it wasn't the studios either.
Yeah, I understand where maybe someone who's a little more, I guess, like in good faith in the public eye, someone who's been credited with a lot of these comedies probably would have been a good first choice, but work with what you got, I guess. And
yeah, there was a short list for the two leads, I think, that made its round on Twitter shortly after the release of the movie, and Chris Pratt was the number one choice originally, and you can really tell, I think, with a lot of the writing, that James Marsden is kind of trying to do a Chris Pratt a little bit, especially for me personally, that was what I thought with the whole Donut Lord joke, and that maybe being a Star-Lord thing.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I could see that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense pairing them together.
Yeah, so I definitely saw this as maybe something they were hoping Chris Pratt for, but they got James Marsden, and I honestly think James Marsden I think the thing that you can always say about James Marsden is he goes for it.
The thing you can always say about James Marsden.
He goes for it. He took the Sonic part and he did his absolute best with it. And I think it turned out really well.
Yeah, I think it turned out fine. I think James Marsden did fine. I think I would have liked, well, we can get into it in a little bit, but I would have liked just more Sonic on screen. I feel like James Marsden was on screen more than Sonic at times, which was kind of bizarre. But maybe that's because they wanted to pull in that star power role like the Chris Pratt. Then that made it would have made more sense, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, if you had a more traditional leading man, maybe that makes sense to focus on them. And
right.
Particularly if you weren't like that confident in your delivery on Sonic, like maybe the writers were not certain how that was going to play, which like in a Sonic the Hedgehog movie is a problem. So maybe you kind of shortchange a little bit and let the human take the front seat if you're not in total confidence. But I do think he delivered a pretty good performance. Like Josh said, like he's going to sprint straight through to that C+ every time you give him the chance. But I think he actually delivered on this one.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. He's always going to give you at the very least. You're not going to ever get a C or a C minus from him at the very least.
Yeah, it's like, are there better people for this role? Yes. Are there many more worse people for this role? Absolutely. Like it's not like we went to the bottom of the barrel for James. It's just maybe he's a little stale. Like he might not have been the absolute top tier choice, but it worked. It was fine.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. That all being said, we're going to start to get into a plot synopsis here. And with actually this opening scene, I want to open up the can of worms on the original Sonic design by saying that we open on the scene of baby Sonic in his Sonic world, which is different from our world. And I would like to posit the theory that they did not redesign baby Sonic. Baby Sonic looks like he grew up to become the original Sonic design.
I'm 100% with you. When I was watching it, I thought like, oh no, like yeah. Baby Sonic does not look good. But then I remembered they had to change his look. So I was like, oh, okay. They didn't change the look of baby Sonic. They went with it.
Yes.
And decided he was going to blossom into the Sonic we know now.
He went through an awkward phase and then he really came into himself after puberty.
Yeah, they really ugly duckling Sonic, and that was a little unfair. Like it was a bad introduction in that regard. Like I liked the other world. I liked the kind of fantastical element to start the movie off instead of putting us right into just, you know, his boring everyday now, like seeing where he comes from and all that. Great artistic choice.
Yeah.
However, the design, go for it. Just a little off.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, and why would they? You know, no one saw it originally. No one had any thoughts on the original design of the baby Sonic. So, and he's not even in it for that long. So, you know, just leave it how it is, I guess.
No telling how many millions of dollars they saved by just saying, oh, that's fine, and moving on.
And you know what? Yeah, I'm fine with that. So baby Sonic goes through a pretty traumatic event. There are people who are trying to take his powers. His adoptive mother, Long Claw, dies saving him and basically tells him to run forever, always be on the run, never let anyone take his powers. Use these dimensional portal rings to go wherever you need to go to remain safe. And so that's what he does, and that's where he finds himself in Green Hills, Montana.
Big Easter egg drop on that Green Hills.
Oh yeah, the biggest one so far. And he's kind of stalking this family. He's stalking.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
Was I alone in that? I was like, oh, they kind of made him just like a stalker for 10 years.
He's pretending to be like their son or their friend. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it was a little creepy, just like putting it plainly. Like that's not great, but I get that they're illustrating that, you know, he's alone. No one knows what he looks like. They're all kind of afraid of him because he's an alien in all sense of the word, pretty much.
Yeah, but no one believes he exists except for Carl, who draws the meme Sonic drawing in his depiction of Sonic, which is great. And they're great. They know exactly where to place the memes in
this movie. Good memes all throughout the movie. I popped for every one of them. Yeah, that was 10 out of 10 choices.
So good. Yeah, the meme drawing showing up just for a quick second. And, you know, it's just Carl going off again about this blue devil, which he calls Sonic, and he's the only one who knew until Sonic is revealed later. And so he is obsessed with who he calls Donut Lord and his family. He wants to be part of their family. He's feeling very lonely. And Donut Lord, James Marsden's character, what was James Marsden's character's real name?
Something was Wazowski, something like that.
Probably Dave.
You're right.
That's a guess.
I don't remember at all.
We'll call him Tom, James, right? Marsden. Tom. That's it.
I think it was Tom.
That's yes, it. Tom Wachowski. That's it.
That's the one. And he gets accepted into the San Francisco Police Department.
Of course he does. And they're
going to move to San Francisco. And they're looking at apartments in a blatant, the first of a few blatant advertisements in this movie for Zillow at a $4,600 a month San Francisco apartment, which is very realistic.
Very realistic, very on the low end right now.
Yeah. So they're thinking of moving. And this is where we get kind of our the event that sets off the rest of the movie. Sonic is playing baseball with himself in what I thought was honestly a hilarious scene, because I was watching Sonic play baseball with himself just running really fast and being all these different characters, and him taking the time to have one of the characters be the kid who's like picking grass care.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie, because at this point, I mean, it's a family movie, but if you're kind of analyzing like we are as adults, you kind of understand that, you know, Sonic's been alone for this whole time, and he's super lonely, and he's kind of, you know, developed this need, this want for friendship, and it's hilarious and also somewhat sad at the same time watching it. But I think it did a service to who Sonic is, setting him up for the movie, and you know, showed off that, you know, this guy's just super fast.
Yeah, and then like breaking through the barrier and
loved it,
cutting off all the power to the little town. Alec, what did you think of this scene?
I really enjoyed the hopping around between different characters and framing it that way, but it delivered on the one thing that I was worried about going into the movie. Really, is Sonic being so much about speed and like kinetic energy, I was kind of concerned that that wouldn't play on screen as well as, you know, some of the other adaptations of video game or cartoon movies going onto the big screen. But I think what they did was a very smart way to show off exactly how that works. They chose a Flash-esque ability to be in multiple places and almost slow down time in the way that you're moving that fast. And I think that played brilliantly, putting a good bit of humor just before that breakthrough where he accidentally, you know, causes this blackout that, you know, propels us into the rest of the movie. I loved the placement there, just knowing that this was your chance to show who Sonic is before the problems start rolling in at such a high rate.
Yeah, absolutely. And also does a really good job of setting up, which we get in the very next scene, is the introduction to Dr. Robotnik and why Robotnik is the only person fit to deal with a situation such as Sonic, and why the U.S. government goes to him to figure out the situation, makes it a scientific thing. Oh, what's going on here? What is this anomaly? And it's Sonic, and pitting the two of them together there. I think they do a really good job of that. And then that is where we get Jim Carrey's introduction, and I think it is great. This scene almost made me want Sonic to lose and for Eggman to win. What did you guys think of his introduction?
I love that introduction. The scene just before it, where they're in the boardroom with all of the military leaders and they're discussing how to move forward and someone suggests Robotnik. I think that was the first time I became keenly aware that we were watching a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Because the logic just went straight out the window. A lot of these guys who are seemingly pretty serious actors. Like, I don't remember every face in the room to tell you who exactly it is. But, like, they come in with real, like, weight in the room, and then it quickly devolves into kind of just a straight line to Robotnik, which, you've precluded some things there by going to that place. But it was the first time that I was like, oh, yeah, right. This is not going to be as serious as maybe the first little bit kind of prepared you for. With Sonic being on the run and his life being in danger, for the adults to just immediately start squabbling like children over this eccentric scientist was like, okay, yeah, that's a nice reminder of what the tone of this movie is going to be. I don't think it's a bad thing that it wasn't taken, you know, to any extreme degree of logic, but it definitely kind of cleansed the palate going forward, being like, don't expect this to be like an emotional drama or anything like that. Like, this is what you're going to get from the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Chris, what did you think of that scene and then the introduction of Jim Carrey?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Well, to be honest, from the timestamp, I think the movie checks out at like 1:30, 1:40. That kind of told me it was a kid's movie. So I kind of knew the tone that they were going for. But especially that scene in the room that you described, where they're just like, we need someone different. We need Dr. Robotnik. Yeah, that was very like cartoon come to real life, to live action, right? But Jim Carrey, I don't mind Jim Carrey. I like Jim Carrey when he can just be himself, and I think that's kind of what he was doing. I felt it was very, it was a mix of his Riddler, his Grinch, and there's one more that I got vibes from, but he does the same kind of motions, the same movements that go along with his screaming and his villainous tact in those movies, which I don't mind, especially, I mean, and granted, we just talked about how this movie's for kids. So like, the chances are some kids just haven't seen him, right? Haven't seen him portray some of these characters. So it's like, it's a fresh take, but I didn't mind it. I knew what he was gunning for, and I knew, the type of villain that they were trying to do. And as we discussed earlier, they're probably just like, we got Jim Carrey, let him do Jim Carrey things. Like, Robotnik is what he is, but let's let Jim Carrey at least define him early into what Jim Carrey thinks Robotnik is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Dr. Robotnik is like this, you have to stay true to the Robotnik character from the 10 layer deep
character that rides a giant hover. No, he's none of that. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think he does keep that.
And that scene in the boardroom, I think being kind of goofy does set you up very nicely for that entrance as well. Mm-hmm. Because when Robotnik comes in, he just immediately starts shutting down these like military commanders, Neil McDonough's character, Bennington, or whatever his name was. For him to just talk over him and just completely shut him into the ground, I was like, this is fun. And yeah, Chris, you're absolutely right. That like, it's like the Riddler, the mask.
Yeah.
Energy for sure all the way through.
Yeah, and hey, when you got Jim Carrey, why not?
Yeah, like let him go do his thing, especially in a movie like this. Like, we haven't had a good classic Jim Carrey performance like that in a long time. So yeah, even generationally, there a lot of those, you know, a lot of the audience for this movie may not have seen those, but you're right about that. Like, some of those are now nearly as old as I am. I'm 25 now.
So. right.
Yeah, weird to think we live in a world where for some in the younger generation, this is Jim Carrey to them. Jim Carrey is Dr. Robotnik.
Right.
Yeah, that's really odd.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think he does a great job. I think his introduction here is sells that character, this version of Dr. Robotnik, really well. So moving on to our next scene, this is where we get the reveal. The Blue Devil is real. James Marsden is finding Sonic in his attic, basement. He finds him in his house.
Oh yeah, it was like the greenhouse or whatever that they have in the backyard.
Yeah, it's like a garage or greenhouse or something in the back.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
it. And then we get the classic from the trailer, the meow, and then he shoots him with a tranquilizer dart.
That's a perfect trailer scene. Like, that summarizes a whole lot of the energy of the movie, and it plays just as well inside the movie. Like, you get there, it's silly, James freaks out. Yeah, it just everything that you're going to get from the movie going forward. Like, I think that's probably my biggest note, is that at least the movie was consistent. Whether you like it or not, the themes and the attitude from each of the characters stayed really, really apparent the entire way through.
Yeah, and I love the when Sonic does come to, I love their interaction together. I love James Marsden having this realization of like, I gotta help this guy. I don't know what it is, but it seems like this Sonic is in need, and I'm gonna be the one to help him. He like makes that commitment right there, and their interaction there is really good, and then really sells the next scene where Robotnik comes in and he has to hide him from him. Chris, what did you think of their meeting?
I thought it was a good first clash, because now they already have their missions, right? Robotnik is already after some unknown entity, but we know he's after him. And James Marsden's character, Tom, is already protecting the entity. So it's like we already know that this is going to be the human rivalry in the movie. And I thought it was a good portrayal of what was to come throughout, and the friendship of James Marsden character and Sonic. I thought it was cute.
Yeah, and then Sonic says the lines, "It's life or death," which earlier James Marsden basically tells his wife that in a life or death situation he wants to be the person who's there to help. And then Sonic says, "It's life or death," and he's like, "Okay, yeah, I'm gonna help this little hedgehog." He saves him from Dr. Robotnik. I think a great scene there where Robotnik does get outsmarted by James Marsden. I think that pits them together really well. And then we start what is basically a little road trip movie to San Francisco.
Yeah, they're coming from the Pacific Northwest, right? They're going south, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, it'd be Montana. So yeah, it's vaguely south.
Oh, Montana. Okay. I just quickly to point out, because it happened in the scene we were just talking about and on the road trip, I found it interesting how they tried to keep James Marsden's character. They tried to justify in some way, shape, or form how he can protect or be of use to Sonic. So in the first scene, he tranked him, so Sonic's speed was gone, at least for the first segments. And then on the road trip, Sonic's like, "Fine, I'll go to San Francisco on my own," and then runs off, and then runs back and realizes he doesn't know where San Francisco is. So they keep trying to make James Marsden's character useful. Yeah. And that just gave me a chuckle, because every time you think of someone with superheroes, it's like, or superpowers, it's like, what do they need us normal people? Yeah. It's super speed, but it was cute.
Yeah, I guess theoretically he could have run to every city in the country right before they drove there.
Right.
I did like that scene where he comes back and has the like seaweed or whatever in his hair. Yeah. Like, I don't know where San Francisco is. Yeah. It's actually a good point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Like, I have a fish on my head.
Yeah, it's just enough for me to have not really thought about it that much until now. And then we start on our road trip. I did want to bring up one small thing. From when Sonic was hiding from Robotnik, he's curled up into a ball surrounded by a bunch of other like sports balls. Mm-hmm. And he says this line that I just thought was so funny, and I just wanted to bring it up. He says, "Oh, I hope they don't scan me. I had a really embarrassing lunch." And it just got me thinking, what is an embarrassing lunch to Sonic? What does Sonic see as embarrassing? Someone who hasn't really interacted with another living being in 10 years. What did he eat? What could it possibly have been? It got me thinking for way too long after this movie.
You missed like half the movie the first time because you were thinking about what an embarrassing lunch is.
Yeah, I haven't been able to pinpoint anything, but I did just want to bring that up. Great throwaway line there, I think, that was just, I thought, hilarious. And I just wanted to bring it up.
That's a good point. I skipped right over that. I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
It's... Like, beetles eat bugs and stuff, so... Or hedgehogs eat, like, beetles and other bugs and stuff, so maybe... How hedgehog is Sonic, I guess, was the question.
Yeah, or maybe he's like, you know, he wants to kind of give off that he's more human, so he eats a lot of human food, but he still has that instinct of wanting to eat bugs, but he doesn't like to show it, so maybe that was it.
Maybe, I guess, because we really only see him kind of partaking in human activity the rest of the way through the road trip. That's what a lot of the focus is for the next, you know, 30 minutes of the film or so.
Yeah, that actually brings us really nicely to our first stop on the road trip, which is a little gas station, and then there's kind of like a trucker bar, or like a what would you call that, like a biker gang bar kind of.
Yeah, a biker bar, yeah.
And they don't want to stop, but Sonic just can't control himself, and he has to go and hang out there in a big like Hawaiian shirt and sunglasses. They inevitably get themselves into a bar fight, and Sonic does the Quicksilver X-Men thing where he stops time to move everyone around and then lets the madness ensue when he lets everything go. This is the first of a couple times he does this, the Quicksilver effect, if you will. Chris, what did you think of the bar fight scene?
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. I don't think I don't think anyone has done the Quicksilver scene as well as Quicksilver has done it in, what was that, First Class?
Yeah, including the second time Quicksilver did it in the next movie.
Yeah, he couldn't even outdo himself. But I can honestly say, though, I don't get tired of those scenes. I think they're really clever. I think they're really fun. And I like when different characters in different movies kind of do their own thing. I thought it was cool. And then one of the things I also want to note from this scene is this is the first time we learn of Sonic's bucket list, or to create a bucket list, right?
Because
he's been missing out on so much. So I think that him just enjoying life in there for a second and the first signs of real friendship between him and Tom is an important part there.
Yeah, they also throw in a really good like Sonicism of him eating the chili dogs on the way, which is great. Yeah. Another great Sonic little Easter egg. Alec, right. What did you think of this scene?
Yeah, you guys were right. It's just like a little classic fun bit. Like it's never going to do anything great for the story in those kinds of scenes where they're just showing off how crazy they can make this, faster than the human eye can see kind of play with Quicksilver, the Flash, Sonic, like all of these characters that have this ability. But like it's never gonna go wrong. Everyone loves it. It's a crowd pleaser. And it was nice to see Sonic kind of have that moment of cutting loose and just kind of being the kid that he really is. You know, he's been surviving on his own for however long, and he gets this moment of just like pure freedom and chaos before getting back to the fact that like he's being hunted and Robotnik is really, you know, trying to do something with him and wants to harness his power for something. So it's like, it's a nice, free, fun, friendly, and I guess in the way that a bar fight can be kid-friendly kind of moment in the movie.
Immediately after this, we get a really great scene, I think, between the two of them where they are at the hotel. And they really have their first real friendship moment. And then Sonic says he thinks he ate chili dogs and then passes out. And sleeps off the chili dogs. And the next morning, as they are on the road, they are being tailed by Dr. Robotnik. And that's where Sonic's real superpower of turning into a ball and doing a little dash attack is revealed. And he reveals how powerful that he can really be in that state. I thought this was really cool. It sets up the end game of him like being able to do this little attack thing, and of course brings us more into the game world of it and his powers. And I thought that was a fun one too.
I like it a lot for it being the moment that Sonic starts to believe in their ability as like a duo. Because before it was just kind of chaos and they're becoming friends, but it kind of feels like, is this even going to work? We have to get there and get the rings. But here you see like, okay, we're in danger, but we figured it out. Yeah, they're starting to establish that kind of good faith with each other, which I think does help play later in the movie when we're getting into the personal stuff that happens towards the end.
Yeah, I agree.
I also like that this scene was kind of a not that we're watching something that can happen in real life, but this is also a scene where we get kind of brought back to the idea of this whole podcast that this is a video game movie, right? Yeah. Sonic has powers, like he just doesn't run fast. There are elements to his ability, and we're going to show him off right now. And the people that played his game will recognize this and enjoy it.
All right, so moving on, we get to San Francisco finally, and we are reunited with James Marsden's wife and her sister, who really does not like James Marsden, really wants them to get a divorce. and this is borderline verbally abusive on both ends of this between the two of them, but they do have some great little banters back and forth there as James Marsden reveals a half lifeless blue hedgehog to his wife and her sister, which is great. Just what could this thing possibly be? Imagine someone walks into your house who you don't like with Sonic. What's your reaction?
I like in your notes you put Sonic died.
That's great.
It really seemed like it.
I think that this bit of the movie, because we do spend quite a bit of time here at the start of the San Francisco stuff with Maddie and Rachel, I think the sisters' names are. But I think Tika Sumpter as Maddie, she was already like really good at the start. Like she gives a lot of heart to James's story and comes back in at the end to kind of bring it all together. It does make a nice trio out of Tom and Sonic and herself. But Natasha Rothwell as Rachel, the older sister, is incredible. She is just absolutely crushing it in that role the whole time.
Absolutely.
She's probably my favorite character in the entire movie.
Another instance of a character taking the role and just running with it. Yeah.
Yeah, really. There's been the Twitter kind of trend of understanding the assignment going around.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Natasha just came in and got the entire heart of the movie right away. And it adds so much. I think particularly her daughter just like completely ignoring her as she's on this tirade against Sonic and Tom is just, it's beautiful. It's definitely my favorite element of the movie the whole way through.
Yeah. And then she is actually the one, her daughter is the one who gives him the Sonic sneakers, which look great. Very surprised they weren't branded based on all of the other advertisements that have been in the movie. We went right past a big one, which is the Olive Garden. They were advertising their app. At the Olive Garden app.
I think
we'll get more Olive Garden later too.
I actually think so. I don't know if this is gonna be my corner, but I love shoe placement in movies. I don't know why, but I'm pretty sure they branded it as Pumas. I think.
Oh.
It is branded. We'll have to get a fact check.
I think so. Yeah, we'll have to look into that. So they may be Pumas, and I would. I think I could see that.
I did really enjoy that it came from her niece.
Yeah.
And how he was kind of like, no one's ever given me anything before, and it was something as iconic as his shoes, right? I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
full agreement. That scene was beautiful.
Yeah. So next we have the big plan to get Sonic's rings back. He had dropped them through another dimensional portal into San Francisco, and they had fallen atop a large tower in San Francisco. So he needs to get to the top of that tower, and so luckily he has a brand new San Francisco Police Department police officer to help get into his, the exact line that he uses, I quoted this, is "time for me to abuse the power entrusted to me." That's a choice they went with for this movie. It's
maybe a little better phrasing could have been applied there, but yeah. I guess if you're already labeled a domestic terrorist by, you know, the outside world, maybe that's not the biggest deal.
Yeah, not your number one concern, I guess, right there. And he's just trying to get Sonic to the top of the tower, so not the worst thing you could be doing. And then I had another note here. Later in the movie, the Sonic animation quality, I think, really takes a hit. I feel like he's not as vibrant later on here. I don't know if maybe that was just me, if I felt like I was looking at him for too long or something, but I feel like it, like maybe that he wasn't quite as, for lack of a better way of putting it, well animated in the later part of the movie. Just an observation that I had, and I could be wrong. It could have just been me looking too much at it. Did you guys experience that at all?
I'll have to look at it again, but I agree that I found myself looking at Sonic a lot, just like looking at the little hairs and how the quills are more predominant on his head than the regular hairs. I liked his look, but I did find myself just staring at him a lot.
Yeah, he looks good in general. Like, I think, you know, they really did a good job with the redesign, and I think he looked like Sonic, like you would imagine Sonic to look like.
Yeah.
I would have to watch it again to have a definitive opinion on how the animation progresses, because I've only watched it the one time, and it was like 3 a.m. All my lights were off.
Nah.
I was awake, but like I wasn't paying that level of attention
to
what was going on the screen. Like I was keeping up, but I wasn't like inspecting it.
Yeah. No, it was definitely minor, if anything at all. So next we have, I had the note here, Eggman's still the best gamer in this movie. He wears the Nintendo Power Gloves at all times. He's constantly tapping his own hands. and he comes up in his classic hovermobile thing and is facing off here against Sonic and company. And we get another Quicksilver fast scene with a bunch of rockets, and he's like moving all these rockets all around. This time does not go as well, though. The rings fall, and I wanted to say the ring sound design throughout the movie, mm-hmm. the few times that we got to hear the ring, like the little bling, so good. It really brought me back to like every Sonic game I've ever played.
Yeah, that's the ring sound is definitely one of the more iconic Sonic sound bits.
I think any opportunity to bring in those classic elements, whether it's the sound of the rings, the Robotnik floating egg contraption, whatever that's actually called, anything like that definitely helps it feel more grounded to the games that we grew up on and makes it feel more like it's a same, you know, piece of that universe. That's something that I think this movie did better than a lot of other video game movies. It definitely felt like I was watching, you know, a live action adaptation, because we've seen other things from Sonic. We've seen Sonic X and the other TV show from like the 90s. And this fit like really well alongside those things as true to the Sonic brand, in my opinion. And yeah. I think little details like that really help that along.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so now we have a little bit of a chase scene that eventually culminates in the face-off between Sonic and Dr. Robotnik, who I believe he's called Eggman at this point. So he's Eggman now. And there's no better way to put it. Sonic goes chaos mode. There was an emerald somewhere, I guess, chaos emerald, and he goes chaos mode, and he gets all Super Saiyan-like. He does his little bouncy power. That's how you beat Eggman in all the games, and he does it here, too. It's great.
It is great. He did and you guys have to school me here, he did like an electricity thing. Is that something for the movie, or does he have some sort of intrinsic like electric power that I don't know about?
I think it's the same thing they used in like similar to during the baseball scene, where it kind of was just like a visual representation of his like the force that he's emitting.
Right. I guess I was just wondering, because he used it to like pull the ship, and I was like, what's happening? Is that what Sonic does? Whatever. It's a kid's movie.
Yeah. Yeah, Sonic is powerful.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the specifics of it, but that's definitely what they were going for. Like with the particularly like his little quills being able to power whatever it is that Robotnik's trying to boot up, like all these crazy inventions. Like, yeah, sure, he's definitely generating something off of him. It looks like lightning. It's some kind of energy. I don't know how he uses it. I know like Electric the Hedgehog is a real thing in the Sonic universe, so there's something's going on there.
Yeah, I think it was a really cool scene. I just liked Sonic did feel very powerful, and then of course at the end of that fight he uses one of his dimensional rings to push Eggman into the mushroom universe, mm-hmm. where all that exists are mushrooms.
Can we talk about that real quick? There's a couple things with that universe, right? Like I think Mushroom Hills is a level in one of the Sonic games.
Yeah.
But is the Mushroom World also a nod to Sonic and Mario's rivalry? Like, is that why he doesn't want to go to Mushroom World?
That was my first thought, was that it was a Mario jab.
Right. I thought so too. Like, that's why he was so disgusted by it.
Yeah. Alec, did you have any thoughts on that?
I was, when they first said it, that was I went to the same place, was like, is this just a complete jab at Mario? Are they allowed to do that? Like,
yeah.
This is a Sega produced movie. I don't know, maybe it's just subtle enough not calling it Mushroom Kingdom or whatever.
Yeah, but I feel like what they did, it flies.
But also, if it's just Sonic has beef with mushrooms and thinks they're gross and smelly, then like, okay, I understand that too.
I think we're meant to have that question you know, is it this, is it not? The ambiguity of it is it may be intentional, but I definitely, the first thing I thought of was this is a Mario jab. Okay, so moving on from that, we go home where we have found that Sonic is living with James Marsden and his family now, which is everything he's ever wanted. And the government does come snooping around. They offer James Marsden an Olive Garden gift card, and he assures them they do, of course, have never-ending pasta bowl, should you be interested. And of course, you might remember a plot point from earlier. You could even do so from the app, the Olive Garden app. So that would be, if you're interested in something like that, this movie is very, very happy to inform you that you could. So Olive Garden, big part of this movie. It's the ending joke of the movie.
Is that why I wanted breadsticks the whole time? Is that the reason?
It could be. Sonic does the Backpack Kid dance once again. That's a two on the Backpack Kid dance. And they live happily ever after until we see Eggman growing not only more powerful, but also his mustache. And we now have the classic Eggman mustache, mm-hmm. which looks great.
Yeah, no. Another one of the references that just instantly made me pop. I was like, yep, okay, now we're doing things right. This is great. Fantastic. Still on board, even at the end.
Yeah, no, I 100%. So watching the movie, when they first, I didn't say this earlier, but when they first introduced Dr. Robotnik, I didn't like the look. I didn't really understand it. I think he was wearing all black, when I don't think Robotnik has ever done that. The only thing that he had was the curly mustache, kind of, but Robotnik's is still like fuzzy and like pop out. Traditionally, Robotnik is a little more of a rounder character, and mm-hmm. with his bald head, and Jim Carrey is wearing a really sleek black coat. And I was like, okay, well, do what you want, movie, with his character. But as the movie goes on, later on, he wears the red suit that they kind of poke fun at, and he says it's a flight suit, and then finally we get the classic look. And I think it does pay off at the end. But early, I was a little skeptical because they weren't staying true.
Yeah, I like this as a Robotnik origins kind of.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it gives Jim Carrey that room to kind of make it his own character while kind of easing us into that more kind of over the top cartoony look from the games, while also having this personality that is very much Jim Carrey's. So I'm excited to see what they do, because we do know for sure Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is happening, and we got a nice little after credits Tails scene at the very end of this. What did you all think of the Tails reveal? Alec, what did you think?
I think that putting something like that, you know, kind of in a style that is really really common now after the Marvel craze has come and, you know, taken over in pop culture, keeping these little, you know, hints and teases at the end of movies is something that is almost expected, for better or worse, now.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're dealing with a franchise or IP, you know, based movie. Yeah, it works great. I think when you come back into that scene and Tails first shows up, I was like, oh, this is a nice little, like, nod. And then they continued with the story. It was clearly trying to hint at a continuation. And at the time, I didn't know that Sonic 2 had already been greenlit and that this was happening. So I was like, oh, that's cool. I hope that happens. And then, you know, the next morning, getting up and Googling it and being like, oh, no, this is like for sure. This is happening.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This is great. I enjoyed this movie. The scene itself is pretty fun. And if we're going to build this Sonic cinematic universe, Tails is the logical place to go next.
Yeah. Chris, what did you think of the Tails reveal?
I loved the Tails reveal. Just like Alex said, the movies, I feel like if they're going to do, there's an expectation to have that after credits or like before the full credits run, a scene like that, just to keep people, you know, in their seats at the theaters or whatnot. It's just like an expectation now. And when you do it, I feel like you're either wowed or it's the biggest disappointment, right? And so every movie has to do something like that. And this particular one kind of caught me in the middle ground, because I am really happy that they did Tails head to toe. Like they formed him out. He looks great. I was chuckling at your notes. You're wondering if Tails is a redesign. I don't know, maybe.
You know, that's a legitimate question I have. What did Tails look like before the redesign? Because
probably awful.
Probably much different than he ended up looking, right?
Yeah, because he looks great. Sonic. It's very close to Sonic. And so I was thinking about that too. The way they designed Sonic and the way that people really like his look now, they have a blueprint for everyone else, right? Like they have the blueprint now for the Tails look, and then potentially for like a Knuckles or an Amy or whatever who comes next. But I do like that Tails came in at the end. It kind of reminded me that the beginning of this movie was kind of a full-fledged, like, there's a lot of CGI animated characters like Sonic that were showing up in the beginning of the movie, and then we kind of, you know, for that hour and a half or so, it was just Sonic and everyone else was a real human. But, you know, they're kind of reminding us that, hey, we can go back to adding more CGI characters like Tails. And it seemed like Tails had some sort of story element, like he needs to find Sonic for something.
Yeah.
So I'm excited if it could be like a tag team thing with them in the next movie. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. My interest is certainly peaked for the next one. And we do officially have a little kind of like a little teaser image for the new one. And that's more recent, though the movie is still a ways off. But I'm excited, like you said, Alec, for them to build out this Sonic cinematic universe, to see all of those, the Tails, the Knuckles, the... Do we get Rogue even? Like, definitely we get Shadow down the line. Like, how cool would that be?
There are a few little, like, nice, you know, teases towards these things. Like, the person who shoots down Longclaw in the beginning is Pachacamac, the leader of Knuckles' little tribe.
Oh.
And that was the first, that stood out to me, because I don't know a whole lot about the Sonic lore, but I recognized that character right away. And right after the movie, I started kind of searching, like, who was that? Why do I know that design?
Okay, wow. Okay, so there we go. They've done their homework, it seems, so that's exciting.
Yeah, there's little things that are tucked into the movie, like that one. I'm sure there's more than even what I know. But when I caught that, I was like, I wonder if this is explicitly trying to say something. And with the Tails reveal, it probably was. We'll probably be revisiting that whole story at some point.
That makes me incredibly excited. I didn't even know that until now. But yeah, that has me even more interested to see where these movies go.
And also, I love that, like you guys were saying, with Robotnik kind of starting at a place of almost unrecognizability, but showing that, like, even an evil character has the room to almost devolve into something worse. You know, we see him go through his own transformation as Sonic becomes more confident. We see him kind of unravel and start to become the villain that we know. Even when he started it unhinged, now he just gets worse and worse with his own, you know, post-credit scene where he does start to even, like, lose the plot even more. I think that shows pretty good understanding of this universe and how silly and off the wall it can be while also keeping it grounded.
Yeah, and not to go on a Robotnik tangent, because I feel like I could talk about him for another hour here, but I do love that you don't really see this a lot anymore, but Robotnik in this movie does claim evil. Like, I'm an evil character. I do evil things, and because I'm evil, and that's my motivation. I am evil. He has some other motivations as well. He talks about, like, how he always wanted to be better than the kids who could beat him up and, like, outsmart them and things like that. But he does say, like, I am evil. He has, like, an evil switch in his little layer thing. So you don't see that a lot anymore, where the character is just outright evil. And I thought that was nice, too, to pit the Sonic good versus the Robotnik bad. All right, Chris. Final thoughts as we wrap up.
Final thoughts. I thought the movie as a whole did a really good job. We talked about earlier how early it established itself as a family movie, and I think that was the right move. I don't know if you can get any more serious than a family movie with a character like Sonic, and where his, you know, his game is full of vibrant colors, and you have a wacky villain like Eggman. I think this was the right path to take. I think as a movie, it does well, and especially as a video game movie, because, as I guess we'll see down the line, the more we do these, it's not a very good streak for video game movies. We'll see if that changes within the coming months with some of these movies dropping. But I think this one really performed well, and I thought Sonic himself was really good. I thought the voice actor Schwartz played Sonic really well, and yeah, I loved everything. I really did like this movie.
Yeah, I largely agree with Chris. It stands at like a 7.5 if I had to really judge it. It's not an amazing movie. It's not like something that is going to, you know, shift the paradigm for video game movies, but it stands at the top of that list for sure. We haven't had too many great ones, but this one is probably the closest to claiming that title if there is one. I like the silliness. I like all of the ways that it felt like a comp or felt like a video game. Everything worked for me, whether it was a 10 out of 10, you know, all around as far as execution on some of the jokes. Like, it didn't have to be. It is silly. It was a, you know, kids or families movie. And yeah, I think you can be a little more lazy in some areas. And sure, the writing is, like I said earlier in that boardroom scene, not everything holds up to scrutiny, but I also don't think that's necessary. So yeah, I'm so solid with this movie. 7.5 out of 10, if I had to give it a starred rating. I'm looking forward to the second one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this was a great start to what looks to be a full franchise for the live action Sonic movies. It sets up everything perfectly. It made me, you know, really feel for these characters and like want to revisit this world, the Sonic world again, in future installments. And then there were just those lines, a few lines that I picked out as we were talking today, what with the I had an embarrassing lunch or whatever, that just seemed like, okay, yeah, refine this as they keep going, and I think this is going to be something that I'm willing to follow for a long time. So definitely a great job on that front, and moving forward with the Sonic movies, it has me excited. We are going to be doing these episodes of Dropped Frames every other week. So for our next episode, we are looking at doing Mortal Kombat 2021, which just came out at the time that you're listening to this episode. That movie will already be out on HBO Max. We are going to be watching that and covering it. And if any of you listening would like to share your thoughts and be part of the show, you can email us at droppedframespod@gmail.com. Link to that will be in the show notes as well. You can also give us movie suggestions. You can tell us anything you want about previous episodes or movies or any other video game movies that you might have to. But next week, if you want to be part of that one, talk to us about Mortal Kombat. And we're excited to get into it and do that again. Guys, thank you so much for joining today. That was a great time.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll see you all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.